Okay, right. Cool.
All right, I'm starting timer too. All right, here we go. Just to keep it warm.
And here we are. It has been a beautiful day in Dawson City. We'd like to thank the Yukon government and the Mining Alliance for inviting us all here. And we are very lucky. Tonight, Mickey Fulp has agreed to do an At the Bar. Usually it's with Brent Cook, but Brent's not here with us this
Brent's
time. So it's
here.
Just At the Bar with Mickey. Yeah. So I'll just throw it directly to Mickey.
Well, and it's more than me. Yeah. We've got Gwen Preston of Resource Maven here and Joe Mazumdar. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a tough one.
I had to ask.
Exploration Insights. And I apologize here. I get confused about how to say Joe's name once again, his last name. But you'll notice that this is audio only.
Audio, no
video in this one. It's a little bit different. And there's a reason for that. There are too many bloodshot eyes sitting around here from our escapades in Dawson City last night.
What happens in Dawson stays in Dawson.
I can tell you that the first night you get into town after spending about 48 hours running around in planes in the bush, you can tend to be a little irresponsible with the alcohol consumption. That's kind of what happens.
You know, we were in dry camps for three or four days running, and we were due, I guess.
Yeah.
Overdue.
And then overdue. Dawson. You just get so excited about being in the Yukon and being Dawson and surrounded by this heritage, this history, and all these great properties. You know, it's hard not to kind of celebrate in their camaraderie.
And you also end up at the Pit, which is a legendary institution, which you should all visit if anyone ever comes to Dawson. Please do check out the Pit. Of course, Diamond Tooth Gertie's is maybe a bit more renowned from a brand standpoint, but the Pit has its own certain
cachet.
Appeal.
Cachet.
Yeah,
yes, cachet,
certain appeal to insiders.
And part of the cachet of coming to Dawson City is we came in a small private plane, and our pilot did a loop around all the dredge piles,
wow,
which go kilometer after kilometer here. Now, I've seen big placer districts, for instance, Yuba City, California, but I don't think I've ever seen dredge piles any more extensive.
Right.
And the other thing here is nothing grows on the dredge piles. So you go to Northern California, and they're all vegetated now.
Yeah.
These are still
you really get to see it. Piles of rock, and you see just how much rock has been moved as these placer miners have just churned through it, and they continue to do it because there's so much gold here.
And moved way more than once.
Oh, yeah. They've sifted through it numerous times.
And then we've got about 20 million ounces is a gold that has come out of the gravel alone in this one small patch of ground surrounding Dawson City. So it's really extraordinary to kind of see that
amount. And no known source.
The mother lode.
Except for white gold, kind of date it to be about the same age, if not the same age as the placer gold. But white gold only has 1 million ounces. So the roots of that system is still to be found.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
The legend, as we say.
The legend
of gold in the Yukon.
The lure of gold.
We could talk about that a bit, because the big news up here, and it's on everybody's lips, is that the Goldcorp deal closed on Tuesday. So there's a major in the Yukon. It wouldn't really qualify Capstone as one. So this may be the first time.
Well, Ken Ross came in and took white gold,
but they're not doing much with it.
So.
That didn't turn out that way.
You didn't.
Maybe a good place to start is not specifically on that deal. I mean, we've all hashed it to death at this point, really. But talking about M&A a little bit in the gold space overall, you know, we saw Centerra and Tom's Creek, the Goldcorp Kaminak deal. And so maybe a little insight from each of you on, A, we've seen this huge rally in gold. What you think, do you think it's sustainable, A? And I've heard Mickey off the record talk to me quite at length about his view on the gold prices. So we'll get your guys' views on the gold prices and maybe also link that a little bit into, is Canada hot again? Are companies really, really, like I've heard a lot, we've heard the rumors about the other two bidders on coffee.
Yeah.
You covered that in our podcast. Those were Ken Ross and Agnico. Just so everybody knows. So there are people out there with money looking. So we'll go around the table. Maybe we'll start with Mickey and go over to Joe. And you guys can just riff a little bit on that idea.
Well, so the gold price is up, 25% this year, something like that. It's been the best next to silver, the biggest move of anything this year. You got to like that. The thing I like about the move up in the gold price is it's been stepwise. It's gone up, we get a little geopolitical vent, knocks it down a bit, but it's doing this. It's not, it's a stepwise rise. It's not an exponential rise. That's healthy. I think it's got further to go. Somebody asked me the other day, do I think it's going by, to 1,500 by the end of the year? And I go, I hope not, because that's too fast.
Yeah.
Too much too fast. The idea of mergers and acquisitions, well, in a rising environment, looks to me like we're at the early stages of a bull market. I refuse to call it that until there is a merger or an acquisition that involves a bidding war and a significant cash component.
Right.
So, for instance, Goldcorp didn't cost them anything.
Yeah.
$0.
5 days of liquidity is that deal.
They did was dilute their shareholders. Now, if you're a Cavanaugh shareholder, you're extremely happy.
Yeah.
Because you got the bump, and if you were smart and you bought in the bottom, down in the lower time of this market, which is being a contrarian in this business, then you had a huge reward.
Yeah.
Personally, I wasn't a shareholder of Cavanaugh, but if I was, I would have sold into that right away. Because I personally don't like major gold miners. I don't think they are very efficient, and I wouldn't want to be a shareholder of Goldcorp myself.
Uh-huh.
So this is getting good now. So Gwen, let's move on. Yeah. Let's get going here, because Mickey's like, I don't like major gold miners. That's great, because I love sound bites like that. I can play them over and over again like a ringtone, which is great. So let's move on to Gwen and see if we can get more of these awesome sound bites.
I had a couple subscribers certainly write to me and ask, you know, they don't like Goldcorp either. They're not interested in majors, you know, should they oppose the deal? Well, no, it was a good deal.
No, you don't
in the moment.
It.
And the fact is, you can, Goldcorp shares are cash. Like, you're not going to have, the deal isn't going to have any impact on Goldcorp's share price, so just sell it if you don't want it, take the cash, and it's all good. So yeah, it was a great deal. But I like your definition of a bull market not actually being defined until we have, you know, premium cash deals or bidding wars. That's a cool distinction. Gold price, yeah, I think, second what Mickey says about the stepwise move, there's been good consolidation blocks, which is really healthy. The macro environment is just very supportive. I mean, we have negative real rates in a lot of the world, or zero rates, and we are probably looking at an inflationary environment, and we have currencies that are screwed up all over the place. Like, basically every factor that you want to try and support gold, which is uncertainty, overpriced markets, central bank omnipotence, like, it's all in play. And now what you also have is just a lot of investor interest that's slowly but consistently turning towards gold. I feel like the rally that we've had so far has been fueled primarily by long-time mining investors and insiders, people who are in the industry, who know these cycles, who recognize what was going on early. We've all been like buying each other's stocks, and long-time investors have been waiting for this moment for 5 long years, so they've been getting in. But now, as the move extends, you get more generalist interest, you get more funds coming in, and what you also get are these massive funds, like, you know, the $100 billion funds, are saying, we want to get into gold. Those funds take a long time to make a move.
Yeah.
It takes them forever to turn. It's like an ocean-going freighter, forever to turn towards their new target. And then once they do, it takes them forever to figure out where they can even put the $1 billion that they want to invest in our tiny little sector. But that money's all still coming because the rationale behind gold is so real. So I think there's some pretty good staying power for this rally. I also hope it doesn't go too much too soon, but yeah, I'm happy.
All right, let's
we're all happy.
Let's surf over to Joe, because he's had a lot to say. Everyone's got a lot going on. So Joe, I know we had a conversation earlier, and you kind of said something similar about majors, where at Exploration Insights, it's more so on the junior side. You look at, like Mickey said, majors, you guys, it's not a, you know,
I work for majors.
Yeah, you work for majors. Yeah.
I know what they're like.
Yeah.
But I mean, saying that, I mean, Barrick went up almost 100%.
Oh my gosh.
That's a multi-billion-dollar company, obviously, and very liquid. And so if a junior company can't beat that, invest in Barrick.
Yeah.
So we had the push in the Newmonts and the Barricks.
Yeah.
And now a lot of the money is coming trickling down to the smaller companies. Mm-hmm. But we got to remember a 20 to 25% increase in gold has created like 120, 130% increase in the GDXJ.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you not only have to beat gold, but you have to beat it by more than five times mm-hmm. to beat the GDXJ.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have to do exceptionally well. And so that's a big benchmark for these companies. And for these funds to come in, a lot of them can't invest in these microcaps.
Yeah.
So they have to almost wait for them to go up 500% before they can even consider investing in them.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the environment it creates when you've seen gains like you've seen over the last 6 months, where people
Do you double down?
Yeah, exactly.
Or
what do you
get
back
out?
Off?
Yeah. Yeah.
And also for investors who maybe aren't sophisticated in the space, seeing that.
Well, what we've seen is a lot of, let's say, diluted sophistication come in.
Yeah.
Where you can explain something to somebody, but they won't care because they like the jurisdiction, it's gold, it's liquid, I'll take it. And I can't argue with the philosophy, because if you look at the returns year to date on a company that got taken out, Caminac, versus a company that didn't get taken out, Victoria, Victoria's almost done better.
Yeah.
Because Caminac was locked to Goldcorp once the deal was announced. And they didn't go up anymore.
Yeah, they went
up like Goldcorp.
So
Victoria's actually done well.
Yeah, that freezes them.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so actually Victoria's done better.
Yeah.
But our point at Exploration Insights, we like the Caminacs and the reservoirs. And here I will disagree with my colleague here.
With Mickey. He's pointing at Mickey, so everyone knows. We don't have video, so he's pointing at Mickey.
So he was asking for a share component, a cash component, and we did see that with Reservoir.
Yeah.
The deal had to be up $75 million US.
You're exactly right.
As a Nevsun shareholder,
I
was not happy about, because I thought the other bid was frankly a bit of a joke.
Yeah. It was a Chinese bid on the other side.
But it rankled the bid enough that got Nevsun worried, and rightfully so, because the bid, because the vote was really close.
It wasn't going to get across the line.
$75 million US.
It wasn't
well
going
spent
to.
With respect to them, so they needed to spend it.
I laugh
but that's $75 million, and I do stand corrected. Thank you. There was a deal, but $75 million was not very much cash
for what they got.
For what they got,
it was a $2 up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, they've got a lot of cash, and so they have the access to the capital that they could do this. But what we got to consider now is that, yes, there's not much of a cash component in the M&A, but we're not coming far off of the cycle where we've written off $10 to $15 billion. So these guys are coming into this cycle, and the investors are coming in very road weary of bad M&A. So they're coming in very wary of M&A. So if I'm going to make a mistake, and they're making a mistake on the shares, I'm not going to make a mistake by dishing the cash and then risking my dividends.
So do you think then that future M&A activity is still going to be cash poor?
It will be until it's forced not to be.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
At some point,
Reservoir, we had that. Right. And it'll be quality that brings that out when we have a multi. We've seen that before, and I discussed this before on BNN or something else about Gold Standard Ventures. What did we say? Oh, can I say that? Sorry. I didn't mean to say that because we're not on BNN now.
Okay.
I said it twice.
We don't care about BNN.
You don't mind.
Now I've said it again.
I'll say it. BNN.
Okay.
It's fine.
It's an acronym for beer now.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
And so my point there was that we usually see, and I'd done them with Newmont before, is that we did private placements in companies for footholds. And for lack of a better word, it's like urinating on a tree and marking your territory.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've had is that on Gold Standard Ventures, we'd had one person do that. And then we'd had another person do it
on
the same tree.
Yeah.
And that's really not something that happens often.
No.
So the multiple urination on these trees,
the multiple urination, plus the
fact that we had a $2 share price increase with the cash on a quality project in Serbia, I think bodes well for the underlying. We're not going to go from 0 to 60 that quickly. And then I would say on the gold price, I'll keep this short, is that when you look at the Q1 16 numbers, it's not jewelry demand. It's not bond and coin investment.
Yeah.
It's not even central banks that are doing this. It's ETFs.
Yeah.
So if you're running it on ETFs, it's going to be highly speculative, and what goes up can go down.
Okay. Okay. And that's an interesting point. It's like nobody's talking about the possibility of it going down, and you have the Fed constantly out there sending weird signals to the market where they're almost trying to force an interest rate through by the end of the year.
Well, yeah. I think it's driven by what they say, that here's my dot plot, or here's what I'm watching. So if the jobs number is as volatile, it's driving the discussion, which is volatile. Which is good for gold.
So I think we need cash component, and that comes in when we get into bidding wars. When people want these assets, more than one party wants an asset. Mm-hmm. It seems to me, if, as the rumor is, that it was Kinross and Agnico Eagle who also put in bids for Kaminak coffee deposit, they must not have wanted it very bad, because all they had to do was come in with a cash component and a very small incremental raise on the total deal. Maybe not even incremental raise, because hell, I would much rather own Agnico Eagle than Goldcorp myself. That's a mid-tier producer, not a big behemoth gold producer that has not rewarded shareholders for the last 13 or 14 years.
But the point about majors being hesitant to put money out is very valid. The $15 billion in write-downs, like, it's a very valid point. Yeah. It takes a while to sort of gain back some mojo after that stuff.
Well, we've seen most of the acquisitions in Exploration Insights, the four companies we had taken out were taken out by Claude, by a mid-tier, which is a silver standard, but really a gold producer now.
Tahoe.
And Lakeshore, a silver producer buying a gold asset.
Yeah.
So, and then we had a Reservoir taken out by a base metal producer.
Yeah.
And then we had another one I forget.
Thompson Creek with the Santeros.
No.
Something else that I've forgotten because we're at the bar. But my point is that we've seen it not being done by the majors. We've seen it since the mid-tiers, because the mid-tiers can show growth, but the majors can't.
And the mid-tiers came out of the downturn healthier because they didn't have the big write-downs. Yeah. They were able to control their costs better. They were able to repair their balance sheets more efficiently. So they were ready to capitalize.
So we've looked at the idea that there reaches, how do I want to say this, a point where a company gets too big.
Absolutely.
And a gold company, and it seems to be about that 2 million ounces a year threshold. And once they get above that,
it's
then
just
all
a behemoth.
Hell breaks loose.
I absolutely agree.
And below that, we talked about this at PDAC, the real sweet spot for this coming bull market, or what we think is coming, may be the mid-tiers, because those are the ones that are going to try to build up and be major gold producers once they get past that 2 million.
Then you want to sell them and go to the next one.
Absolutely.
So what kind of mid-tier companies are you guys, like, keeping your eye on then?
Do you even look at mid-tiers? Is it better?
That said, my sweet spot in the business right now is shells and startups.
There you go.
This is the way I succeed in the beginning of a bull market. I go in, I pick my people that have done it well before, that perhaps I've been associated with, and I'm putting money in shells and startups and companies with 20 million shares outstanding in a good project with a resource already. That, for me, is where the real growth comes.
Well, it's interesting that that's sort of back, which is very good for Vancouver.
Good news.
That you can do startups.
And housing prices.
And I've seen some characters come, in housing prices. But I've seen some characters come back to, let's say, Howe Street or whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely,
zombies
again. There's
some brains.
Some familiar faces, let's say. And I don't know if they were off doing marijuana or something. But they have since.
But it's also
they were doing marijuana deal, or they were just doing marijuana.
Yeah. Both. Both. One masquerading as the other.
They had a lot of time in there.
Yeah.
No.
No. No. We won't edit this. We won't edit this. But we are out of time. So I'd like to thank our guests. We have Mickey Fulp from Mercenary Geologist. We have Gwen Preston, the Resource Maven. Joel Mazunder from Exploration Insights. And Brent Cook is not here. So it's At the Bar with Mickey.
We miss you, Brent.
That is what it is. So thank you for joining us, everybody.
Hey, we had no four-letter bombs from Brent this time.
No, I don't have to use my beep button. So we're good to go. We're good to go. All right. This is Matthew Keeble signing off from Dawson City.
Well, that was fun.